Welcome back to Silver Screen Social, listeners. I'm your host, Jackson Vickery, and on this episode, I spoke to writer and co-director Kelly O'Sullivan, co-director Alex Thompson, and lead actor Keith Kupferer about their work on Ghostlight. Another reminder for all movie lovers, win a gift card to your favorite local cinema. Subscribe to Silver Screen Social on iTunes or Spotify, leave a rating or a review, and DM us a screenshot on Instagram at Jackson Vickery or at Silver Screen Social Pod for your chance to win. Thank you all for joining me at the Main Street Pizza and Noodle.
The hub of glamour.
The hub of glamour.
All the deals go down here.
Yeah.
At Sundance, I heard.
Yeah. But just to reiterate, I just have to congratulate you all on just such a completely stellar film. And I mean, just seeing it last night with the full audience and then having that standing ovation for you, yeah. Keith, was, I mean, something that was truly so special and something I don't think I'll forget from the Sundance, because it isn't something I've seen so far. So I'm just wondering where all three of you sort of, your worlds collide.
Chicago, and yeah. Really started in Chicago theater. We met...
It all collided on the Humans. This show at American Theatre Company that ended up winning the Tony on Broadway
without
these two distinguished actors. But yeah, I'll get my part out of the way first because it's very unimportant. But I did the trailer, so I never met Keith, but I heard him yelling at the director behind a closed door at one point, and that was cool. And so that's when I knew. I said, in 10 years, I'm going to tap that talent.
That's right. That man's got gravitas.
That man's got something. Uh-huh. Yeah, through the door.
Yeah, and Keith and I were doing that play together, and I was playing his daughter, and yeah. I just thought he was the best in both, you know, talent and as a person. And so then when I was writing this, I thought of him.
What part of... you were talking last night about, I mean, during COVID, you sort of got the inspiration from seeing a taped version of Romeo and Juliet. So I'm just curious, where did you see Keith in all of this?
Well, I knew he was an incredible, it's kind of an impossible role because he has to be sort of emotionally repressed, but then show incredible vulnerability and have tremendous access to anger and be able to do Shakespeare first not well and then very well. And so when I was thinking about who could do all of those things, I mean, really, it was Keith, because I think he's just the best there is. And also somebody who could, the entire film is about the interplay of comedy and drama. And I think Keith very naturally doesn't play either, but understands both and is able to turn sort of on a pin and, you know, have a laugh line, but not treat it like a laugh line, but still get a major laugh, and yeah. Then do those really incredible dramatic moments. So, yeah, I think it's an impossible role. And really, yeah. Like, we talked about it, and we were like, only Keith can do this.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's true. Wow.
You guys are making me incredibly embarrassed.
But you got to work with your wife and your daughter on this. What was that experience like? I mean, I can only imagine how much that sort of adds to everything that's going on in the film.
Yeah, I had worked with my mom. My mom. Well, all right. I have to leave now. My wife. on several different occasions. In the theater, so we have a good working relationship. To work with both my wife and my daughter was really quite special and remains special, because it's not like some play that we were in and you see it and now it's gone. It's actually preserved, so it'll be good for, you know, my daughter for years to come to be able to look back at this. And I think it did lend the authenticity, obviously, of a real family, and the chemistry was built in. we really had no problems working with each other. In fact, when my wife and I work together, things are better in our private life for some unknown reason. It just works out that way. And my daughter is very excited to be an actor, and is very I'm very proud of her. This particular piece, she showed that she has a lot of ability and depth as an actor. And that's, at such a young age, that's quite quite fascinating to see.
Yeah, you said you thought that she had a lot of instinct just from working with her, and that, I mean, I couldn't even think, just putting the helmet on your head, I mean, was something that is, I don't know, to me, I'm not an actor, so I can't really speak to that, but I found that so fascinating when you were talking about that last night, how she just picks it up, and it's like, do that again, that's perfect,
right.
So.
Yeah. Well, Alex and I were talking about this last night, about how on film, a lot of children are portrayed in unrealistic ways. They're given sappy lines to read, and they just look cute and precocious. And the best films with kids are, I feel like, when they allow them to be themselves and to be kids, and whatever their impulse. I mean, they're fascinating creatures to watch, little kids young adults, to just let them go and not crush those impulses. So, you know, that's what I was trying to get across to my daughter. That if you feel it, just try it. The directors will say, cut it, or that's terrific, do that again. Don't self-edit. Don't self-edit as an actor.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard to do, because you don't want to make an ass out of yourself, or feel like, oh, that's out of character. Again, I bring up the John Cassavetes references, that he was always saying, the person you are is much more interesting than any character you can pretend to be. So, in that sense, there's nothing that you can do wrong. You can maybe not fill the vision that they're trying to, the story they're trying to tell, but you can't make a wrong misstep if you're following your own authenticity.
It's really interesting hearing you talk about that. I'm reminded of the conversations we had about Francis and St. Yeah. Francis. And at the time, the way we were talking about it was that, like, after a certain age, like after 6 or 7, the kids were more self-aware.
Right.
And they were sort of performing the precociousness of youth. And I never thought about it as, like, they are unable to access those instincts. They've sort of buried those instincts under...
Because they've been told to.
Yeah, they've been told to. And it's wild to me that Catherine has the access to those instincts just as much as, like, Ramona, who was, like, 5 years old when we auditioned her, right?
Yeah.
I think that just speaks so highly of, I don't know, like, you guys, I think, because her light is not under a bushel in any way.
No.
And you just encourage her to be herself.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Which is pretty rare with young actors, I think.
And people.
Yeah.
People, like, it's not that like, precociousness isn't limited to actors. It's just kids like to pretend, and then sometimes we're told that we have to keep pretending and, like, kind of keep that sense of self buried. And she shows up to set, and she's Catherine. And I think we like that, and hopefully she senses that and, like, feels comfortable. That's cool.
Well, she definitely thought that. Yeah, felt that.
That's
And then, final question for you three. What do you take away from working on a project like this? I mean, I took away so much and wanted to make a phone call to my parents right after.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm just curious what you guys all take away. I mean, you being a new mom.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my gosh, that has to hit.
Yeah.
In such a different way.
For me, the big lesson is continuing to follow our instincts when it comes to the stories we want to tell, how we want to tell them, and the people that we want involved. Like, we don't want to necessarily work with people who are name actors, you know, who are like worth a certain amount of money on a financing sheet. We want to work with people who are incredibly talented, yeah, the best actors, and who we like as people, and that's the entire cast. And it's really gratifying to see that pay off in the way that, like, last night, like, getting to see the reception that the movie and Keith got and be like, yeah, we are, that's right, it should be this way.
Yeah.
And the sense of, like, true camaraderie and playfulness that we had on set, I think, is the way to go. Mm. It was just a sort of cementing of, like, that can be the way we make things, and it can, that helps the finished product.
Yeah. Kind of like, you know, and this is the chip on my shoulder talking, but it's like good news for the industry at large is we've gotten better. We're as good as we've ever been at this, and we're working with people who are as good as we've ever worked with. You know, the actors we're working with are people we hope to continue working with for forever. Bad news for the industry is we're as good as we've ever been at this, and like we're confident. And we did this 100% independently, 100% on our own, with absolutely no help from the establishment, and we're at Sundance. And that feels really good and repeatable. Mm. And I have no doubt that it's repeatable. And so I'm excited to start having conversations where we are driving the bus more and more and more, bringing people into our fold, and sort of teaching them how to make our movies. That's really exciting to me. That's what this whole thing taught me is like, oh yeah, we can do this. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying that after St. Francis got the South By, but it felt different somehow. This feels even more gratifying because I can't help but cry every time I watch the film, even certain scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the first time I've made something where I'm like, I like this. I think we actually did okay. We didn't just pull it off. So, right. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I agree with what you guys said. I mean, I can't put it any better than that. It's funny because I think the thing I realized it was something that happened today when I was coming out of another film. This older couple came up to talk about Ghostlight, and they were praising it, and they were already crying when they came over to me, and I thought it was from the movie that we had just seen, which was very powerful, but they had lost a son. They didn't know where the story was going when they first started watching it. Like, they didn't understand my character's problem. And then when it was revealed, the father of this couple, the man of the couple, said, you know, how hard did it hit him? And he was crying, and he hugged me and said, you know, that film really can be impactful. And that's what I think. You know, I know that already, but to see it in front of you and see how personal a film can be to people is, it was very visceral instead of an abstract theory. And that's a credit to these two guys, the script and their direction, and Alex's moxie.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, gotta have moxie.
Well, that's
an incredible piece.
I'm very grateful to hear that, because that's something I was super conscious of when writing it, was I never wanted it to feel manipulative, or like somebody who might have gone through similar circumstances would watch it and be like, this is grief tourism, this is not how it is. I was very scared of that when writing, because St. Francis, you know, it came from a personal experience that I could write with from, you know, lived experience, and this I couldn't. And so that makes me very thankful that they had that response, that we're not using somebody's circumstances, but we're actually sort of dignifying the circumstances and helping, you know.
Yeah. No, it was. It was terrific. Yeah.
So beautifully fleshed out. I mean, and that's, I think, credit to you guys. I mean, not knowing that there's a
major death that has happened in this film maybe 20 minutes in. I mean, that, it's it, you're really peeling back that layer, and you don't really get the full story until... I mean, you're getting more of the story in Romeo and Juliet and what's happening there versus the deposition. I mean, that's when you finally realize, and that's almost an hour and a half into the film. So really, I mean, that's a true testament to you guys in the writing and everything in that
film.
Thank
you. Thank you. Yeah. It's a real magic. Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and the way that you calibrated your performance, Keith, I think is really... We talked about
that. I was talking to Keith about that last night.
Yeah, of just like the slow peeling back of Dan, of that character, and saving so much of it so that at the end we're just so... It feels like we're so relieved that Dan gets to have this moment of catharsis.
Well, you use... There are like foils, you know, the term foil in a story. It's like somebody who, in next to them, we understand the significance of something. And, you know, foils are often used for exposition. They're used to understand that, like, when this character stubs their toe, it really hurts. But it's fast. It's like a magic trick in this because we don't know what's going on with Dan. Dan could have hemorrhoids. You know, Dan could be going through a lot. I mean...
Correct.
You know,
anal fistula.
Yeah,
that's right. He's not lying about that.
No,
but like, but last night I was thinking about how when Christine says, "I didn't mean to wake up," it's like this. It's like when you, it's like echolocation, where that line tells you the depth of the pain, and you're like, "Wait a second, that's her pain is so evident, and your pain is still hidden."
Right.
But because of that line that like just cries out of the darkness, you're like, whoa, there's something more here, like something more that we're chasing. And I just think the writing is so brilliant in that way, Kelly. Like it's wild. It's like a puzzle, but like a deeply human puzzle.